If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, stay on the line and a hacker will assist you shortly.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes.
Out in Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Why is he only in the left? Oh, because I didn't do that. Okay, say it again.
Good evening.
There we go. And we have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
You do. Good evening, everyone.
And my deepest apologies to everybody. We promised we weren't going to be on the air tonight, and we are. Now, before people get angry and start writing letters, let me just explain. It was a change in plans in the schedule, and we were asked if we would be good enough to do what we usually do on Wednesday nights. And so we are. All right. And that's the end of it. Here we are. Talking about technology and privacy and all sorts of other hacker-related things, which is what we do here on Off the Hook pretty much every week. Everybody's staying, I almost said warm. I know we're staying warm. Everybody's staying cool. Are we all under control? Because I'm supposed to step in every few minutes to make sure people are hydrated and that nobody is sweating too much. Because we're in the middle of the heat wave here. Rob, you've got some kind of a beverage, which looks good. I've got a hot coffee, Kyle. It's my beverage. I guess it's refreshing. Yeah, why not?
I am cool.
You're just always cool.
I can confirm.
Yeah. Gila, you doing okay there?
I'm doing well, although I did hear that drinking hot beverages in a heat wave is good because it does some sort of weird body science that cools you down more.
Well, it does feel good, I'll tell you that. And you know what? Having hot, spicy food also helps. I don't understand it. Alex, how are you doing heat-wise? First of all, where are you?
I'm in New York.
Okay, you are.
I'm in the West Village in New York, so that might not be the case next week. We'll see.
Okay. Well, next week that won't be a heat wave.
Well, let's hope not. But I'm with you in imbibing a diuretic as well.
Well, I didn't say it that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just another way of putting it.
Okay, all right.
Coffee.
Oh, yeah, coffee's good. All right, fine.
Bean juice.
Yes. Rob, you have something?
Yeah, just in case our listeners out there aren't aware of the sacrifices we make as professional radio producers, we did turn off our apartment's air conditioner so we would sound better for you while the show is on. So if it heats up in here and we get heat stroke, it's not our fault. It's all of yours.
Yeah, so we have a fan. We don't even have air conditioning in this studio here. We have a fan that blows semi-cool air into the room, but we turned that off because that's making such a racket we didn't want to offend anybody. So, yeah, if we start passing out, we'll please be patient with us as we try to recover and do the best job we can.
And regard our production values.
Yeah, yeah, always the highest. Okay, so I saw a story today that kind of have enraged me in the middle of this whole heat wave thing. What do you think the headline is over on Axios? How to keep your smartphone cool during a heat wave. Yeah, because that's the priority. That's the priority, to keep your damn smartphone happy and not overly hot. And, you know, I know how to do it. There's several ways. Turn the damn thing off. There's that. Throw it into a bathtub filled with water. Okay? I was going to suggest throwing it into the East River, but no. The East River has enough problems. But, yeah, okay. So, there are ways to do this. I suppose we should let people know. Basically, to avoid reaching the point where your smartphone is gets past the point of no return, where features become disabled, maybe temporarily, maybe permanently. Leaving a smartphone in very hot conditions can permanently shorten its battery life and damage other parts. Don't use it continually in direct sunlight. Did I really have to say that? I mean, first of all, you shouldn't be in direct sunlight, all right? I don't know what you're doing with a smartphone in direct sunlight, but it just sounds like a bad idea. Don't leave it in a parked car or near a heat source. You know, pretend it's a child. Yeah, that might not be the best advice, because I'm not sure how much sense people have. Yeah, but don't leave it in a parked car. Don't leave it near a heat source. Give it water every now and then. Remove your phone case, as some covers can trap the heat. Really, you have to take the phone case off your phone to keep it from overheating. Use the low power mode, which disables some background activity.
That's a good one.
I guess it is. You know, I don't want to get into personal issues here, but I don't like my smartphone anymore. I really don't. I feel like I was misled. It's a Samsung Galaxy, and everybody raved about it, told me this was the phone to get. And I figured, yeah, okay, it came with what, terabyte of memory? Is that what they come with these days? What is it? What's the...
Maybe half or a quarter.
You know what? I don't even know. It came with a good amount, and that's what I decided to get. Turns out, that's unexpendable, and I didn't know that. And they sure don't say that in the brochure or whatever it is they use to advertise these things, because I started getting warnings that, hey, you're about to run out of space. Really? Okay. I'll just pop in another SIM card or expansion module or whatever. And it turns out on this particular phone, due to popular demand, you can't do that anymore. I always seem to be going against whatever the popular demand is. People want to keep everything that they own somewhere else, in the cloud, where Google can watch over it instead of you. People want that. People want to be nagged into updating things constantly. People want their computers to reboot in the middle of the night, even when they're in the middle of 100 projects. You know, people just want to pay a monthly fee for software they used to be able to buy on their own. And apparently people want smartphones that have a finite amount of memory, and when you run out of it, you run out of it. So I've got this phone now that, I've got to go through, I guess, every video I've ever made and decide which ones to delete. Yeah, I can copy them someplace else, but what if I'm out someplace and I finally meet the person who's going to believe my alien abduction video is real, and I've deleted it and I can't show it to them? You know, there's, how do I decide what to delete? It's an unenviable situation. So be careful. Be careful if there even is fine print when you buy a phone. Make sure you get one that you can expand. You can continuously add to, if that's even possible anymore. Whose hand is that? Is that Gila? Gila, go ahead.
It's Gila's hand, yes. I mean, we were actually just having this conversation in our home recently. We were at the cell phone store, and, you know, we are a mixed marriage. I'm an iPhone user. Rob is not. And I said, oh, my goodness, there's an iPhone with a terabyte of storage. And Rob said, yeah, because they're not expandable. But, E, my question is, what on earth do you need to have access to all the time that you're using almost a terabyte of data on your phone.
Well, it's not my idea, but you know, I've been taking pictures and videos for many, many years, and I always, whenever I get a new phone, I copy everything over because, you know, I like to carry my entire life with me too. I have backups everywhere, but you know, I want to have that. I want to have access to it. And it takes time to go through and decide what to delete and what not to delete. So, you know, it keeps getting bigger and bigger. But I figured, you know, phones keep getting more and more memory, so that wouldn't be an issue. And I was wrong. It is an issue. Kyle, go ahead.
Yeah, I think also your phone has taken over what in the past would have been a separate camera, and it's added video, which you may not have been able to do with, like, a digital camera that
That's
you
right.
have
we used
carried.
To, we used to carry cameras around.
Do you remember those days? Well, and that is...
It was a separate device. People don't know this. They're a separate device that did not have a phone attached to it. You just use it to take pictures.
It was an incredible time.
And that was it.
So that has been supplanted in large part for many people, and the manufacturers count on this. And adding the ability to expand has its inherent costs in producing these devices, as well as in making the software compatible with various forms.
Wait,
of
I'm supposed to feel
storage.
Bad that it costs the manufacturers money to make
I'm
the
making
phone?
Up
want,
their...
I'm paying for the phone.
You can make okay. I'm
for
just
God's
saying,
sake, I'm the one paying, not them.
Okay, it's a made up rationale, right?
Uh-huh.
They could make it any way they want. They could like make it into a hat. You know, you could wear your phone.
That's
on
our
your
society
head.
Today. It's a whole bunch of made up rationales.
Right. Oh, for sure. But in any event, that usage is a lot more capable mm-hmm. in effect as well, as this feature has been a source of bandwidth for the carriers, like people communicating and sharing photos much more readily, and people count on this a lot for just everyday activity. I know a lot of like small businesses and individual contractors, you know, people use photos to reference all kinds of things in their course of operations. So people relying on it more, and the images and stuff being much more capable than what we ever would have carried in mm-hmm. a small digital camera. So all of those advances, I think, have made it where a lot of this content resides. But it's increasingly matching the generations of the network as well. So they're sort of urging you to use bandwidth and back this stuff up or otherwise exfiltrate it from your phone, either by perhaps connecting it to, oh no, a computer, if you even have one. And then the more mainstream alternative being these cloud systems where you're storing stuff and synchronizing it over your connectivity, whether that be Wi-Fi or cellular.
And the reason I resist that is because you're then susceptible to whatever security issues that service might have in the future.
And we've had a long, long storied discussion about this.
Yeah, we read about this every week. Something else has been compromised, and all this data is now in the hands of somebody else. And, you know, I really don't want my personal pictures and videos or whatever, anything of mine, being entrusted to somebody else because I don't trust them. So, you know, if I lose my phone or I don't put a strong enough password on my phone or something like that, that's on me, and I can accept that. But I don't like being pressured into having to hand over everything to some other entity, particularly when it's an entity that has proven itself to be non-trustworthy. Yes, Alex, go ahead.
I think this is a massive problem that iPhone users suffer from quite regularly, you know, myself being one of them. And I'll tell you, you know, the iPhone does not necessarily make it easy for you to get your own data off of that phone and onto your own hard drive. I know there are ways to do it, and I've done this, especially, you know, backing up photos and whatnot. But, you know, regardless of that, I'm sure somebody will write it and say, I heard you say this, and it's, you know, here's the way to do it. And that's fine. But I find this whole issue of the data that we carry around on us so fascinating in so many ways, because we have evolved as beings over the last 30 years in some, I think, highly strange ways. But I remember back in the 90s when I was first in high school and then in college working for a software company, and one of the programmers, really interesting dude, loved technology. He loved getting the latest thing. And he had this gadget. Excuse me. It was a gadget that was a keychain. And amazingly, this keychain would plug into a computer, and it allowed you to have 8 megabytes of storage that you could take with you. Anywhere you wanted, you could have 8 megs of data. And it was on a keychain, and I thought this was the coolest thing. I said, oh, my God, this is incredible. This is going to be life-changing. You can carry around a massive amount of data, 8 megs. Now, we don't leave the house unless we have 0.5 terabyte of data on us at any day. It's really extraordinary how we have changed as beings and data subjects over the last 30 years.
But, Alex, don't lessen the magic of that moment, because at that time, it was the coolest thing in the world to have that much memory at your fingertips.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not looking back at a less, you know, advanced culture back then. We had a different kind of technology, and we appreciated that technology. I think we appreciated it more. We didn't take it for granted like we do now. So we made that 8 megabytes really count, and it really brought us something.
Yeah, it did. The way I described it wasn't facetious at all. I mean, it was this amazing thing. It was absolutely incredible. The whole idea that you could carry data around with you without carrying a massive hard drive with spinning parts and some kind of solid state drive that you plug into a computer was really incredible. The other thing that I find is fascinating too is that, you know, 30 years ago, we're doing largely the same things with computers that we're doing today. I mean, most of us, right? Especially if we're lawyers, like I am now. I mean, you were doing the same thing. You're working in Word documents, and creating files that were essentially text files. And so you could back then store a massive amount of data on an 8 megabyte drive because the files weren't that big.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, I really don't understand why Word files are so large. I don't understand why programs are so massive. We're still doing largely the same thing. Word is a spell checker and a grammar checker.
Mm.
What the hell else is it doing that requires gigs and gigs and gigs of my hard drive? It's a mystery to me.
And, you know, it's funny. I've never used Word. I've always pushed back against using that particular program. I never liked the way it operated. And I have to say, and I'm letting out some personal information here by saying this, to this day, I still use the same word processor I used back in the 90s. I think it was in the 90s. It's called WordPro. I think it was made by Lotus, or it was taken over by Lotus at one point. But it's simple. It does what I want it to do. And, you know, since I edit a lot of things, you know, that's really, I don't want to go nuts with all kinds of gizmos and features. I want the basics. And you know, I've used other software, and it's like they try to make it difficult to just do the basics. You know, I noticed that in many, many aspects of the technological world where there are so many choices that you wind up bogged down making the choices without actually doing the work. And sometimes I just like to open up a screen and start writing and not have to worry about all these different things going on. And like you say, using so much memory for something that really shouldn't take much memory at all. You know, words are the same size as they were back in the 1980s, so it shouldn't take up any more space. But, yeah, it sure does. And it's not just word processors. It's all kinds of things. So simplicity doesn't always work, but sometimes it is the best choice.
You know, this reminds me, it's tangential to what we're talking about, but I think, you know, worth mentioning. So my oldest son is 11. You know, he loves older computers and things like that. I mentioned this before. Loves learning about them. You know, loves to, you know, be inside a terminal section like his dad. And he asked me the craziest question the other day. He said to me, you know, so Daddy, when I'm looking at these old computers, I'm wondering, why is there a separate box next to the computer? And I said, what do you mean next to the computer? What box are you talking about? He said, well, there's always some kind of like rectangular box or something that's next to the computer. And then I realized he was thinking of the computer as the monitor.
Oh.
Because he doesn't see anything else. I mean, he was born 11 years ago, right? So he's just used to everything being baked into one flat screen. He's used to an iMac or something like that. He wasn't used to there being a tower with a 3.5-inch floppy and a 5.25-inch floppy, you know, and a massive hard drive crammed into that thing, and expansion slots, you know, these are local bus slots. So, like, he was wondering what the hell the computer was plugged into, and I had to explain to him, I said, no, Sasha, the computer is something different. That is the computer, that box. That's what contains the motherboard. That's what contains the hard drive. That's what contains the CPU. And it was connected by a cable through your VGA card into the monitor. And it totally blew his mind that things were disconnected like that.
Well, you want to blow his mind even more, bring in a CRT instead of a flat screen.
That's right.
Which
that's
is
right. Yeah.
massive
yeah.
in size. And tell him, yeah, that's just a monitor.
I think part of these observations are like salient influences that the design and sort of user life cycle Apple has instituted, and the impact therein of people experiencing it and using it with a wide mix of other technologies in their lives, and it pushing sort of what is adopted and what is used to the limits in some cases. This was a story in terms of just kind of limiting craziness with Apple cabling, I think. That's how they came to standardize the USB-C connection instead of allowing the market to be, like, inherently weird just for mm-hmm. the business plan of one entity. And this sort of common usability, common ability to get features, like the idea that computers only come in like a one form, part of that is the influence of that design and their model. And these things like, yeah, is it expandable? Well, it's starting to feel like much more of a design mm-hmm. and life cycle thing.
Absolutely.
And when you really take into account the cost of replacing devices and the sort of disposable nature the disposable nature of it and that territory that it moves into for consumers is a hassle, because it makes it harder for them to use it when practically adopting it, but it also makes it hard for, I mean, and that's without alternatives or an abundance of alternatives that aren't that don't have larger trade-offs and are convenient and just as affordable and usable as what features Apple might want for their sort of limited hardware or software features.
I understand what you're talking about as far as cables and things that stop working. I get that if you're competing, you know, if it's two different standards, beta, VHS, whatever, you know, this isn't going to work in that. But when it's the same company and they introduce a new form of cable that makes your old system from the same company no longer work or be compatible with the new one, I think that's really low. I think that's something that should not be permitted, because backwards compatibility is so important for not alienating people. For developing something better in the long term. You don't just throw away your old customers. We're talking about Apple a lot, but this is increasingly becoming the default for all the big companies, Microsoft and Google, and they all seem to practice this now. It used to be, you know, Apple kind of was the leader in just not treating its customers right, and yet somehow they keep coming back for more. You have an iPhone, right, Alex?
I do, yeah.
I'm not shaming. It's okay. You don't have to hide your face. but can I just ask, how many different iPhones have you bought?
Oh, my God. It's been a lot. But you know, there was a big gap, I think, between the 8 and perhaps the 13, I think. I went quite a while without upgrading my phone because I just stopped caring about what phone I had. So long as it worked and I could access my email and access the internet, I really, really didn't care about it. And I mean, remember when the iPhone 5 and the 6 came out, and people still line up for these idiotic things, but it just seems less and less relevant.
I remember the iPhone 1, whatever it was called back then.
Is there anything on that earlier handset, Alex, that was a feature that you no longer have, or was it always sort of as limited as we've characterized in the discussion. Like, did it have the ability to have an SD card or any kind of connector that you don't have now? Or is it pretty much the same MO? Like,
it was pretty much the same MO. I honestly think the only difference in the evolution of the iPhones has been the processor speed, which always never seems fast enough for some reason.
No. Hold on. Let me correct you, because this is true of all Apple products. It seems lightning fast at first. And then after a few months, it really seems to get slow, and you want another one. You want a better one.
Right. Yeah, it's something like that. It might have something to do with memory usage or just who knows if it's just the grades. But it's that. So there's the CPU, the processor speed, I think, that has evolved, and the cameras. They just keep adding cameras to these things. That's it. The other thing that I have noticed that really degrades and not such a long time is are the external speakers on an iPhone as well. They turn to garbage pretty quickly. I feel like it becomes really quite hard to hear when you're using a speakerphone after a year or something like that. When you get a new phone and you have it on speakers, oh my God, I can hear people again. This is amazing. I use the speakerphone quite a lot. So that's an important feature to me, and it's something worth upgrading. But the cost of switching to an Android is just too much for me. I'm too busy. I've got too many things going on.
Wow, so you're too deep into it. You can't get out and go to Android.
I can't.
Wow.
I can. You know, I'd have to quit something that I do. I'd have to, like, stop practicing law or...
Well, Alex, you laugh, but, you know, you could have your legal career be on a Mac platform, and then if you want to say pursue medicine, Android is wide open for you. You know, and you don't have to move all this stuff around and disrupt your life.
Yeah, I guess I could just migrate to WordPro or something.
Well, don't knock it till you've tried it. It's you know, it really it does the job. It really does the job.
I still miss WordPerfect 6.1.
WordPerfect,
I did
dabble in other ones, and but that's my favorite. You know, I want to say something good about an Apple product, and that's iTunes. Because I use iTunes. I use iTunes every day, and I find it to be fantastic. I really like it. Now, I should point out a caveat here. I'm not using it on a Mac. I'm using iTunes for Windows. I know that it's no longer supported. I don't think it's supported on Macs either anymore. That's the thing. You get the software, and they just decide they're going to give up on it and leave you high and dry. But, okay, so my secret is, I keep my record library on this copy of iTunes, and it's running on Windows, and it's not only running on Windows, it's running on Windows XP. Yeah, it's running on Windows XP, not connected to the internet, not subject to automatic updates or anything like that, and it's iTunes 8. I don't know what number iTunes is up to now, but it's a lot bigger than 8. Let me just tell you, this works, all right? I can see what song I want to play, what album, what artist. I can sort however I want. I don't get any advertising. I don't get nagged. You know, what I hear today from people who use the latest iTunes version is that Apple actually goes in and changes the data sometimes. If they feel that you listed a song wrong in your own library, they will change it. And I've seen testimonials online of people who have spent many hours sorting things the way they want, only to find it undone in the morning because Apple decided to do something. This is a level of hell I choose not to go into. And that's why I believe we should all be able, if we want to run old software on old systems, if it does what we want it to do. And to this day, I haven't found anything that equals that equals iTunes 8 running on Windows XP for simplicity, for not barraging me with ads, for not messing with my own data. If there are alternatives out there, love to hear about them. But every time I take somebody up exploring something different, it breaks something. Something gets broken in the process, or something is no longer, able to be listened to. You know, it doesn't work anymore because that standard no longer exists, or something silly like that. You don't have to live that way.
Yeah, I think it's important to run software that works, and don't Updates are overrated, you know.
They're
not always, not all types of updates are overrated, but you got to be pretty careful, and especially like with big software manufacturers and a lot of the consumer stuff that's in the news now, it really makes me, it kind of heartens me, warms my heart to hear using stuff that old and in ways that you that work for you and that are enough to do the job. And that's, I think, what we do. We get kind of enticed by new features, and we forget that what we were doing and what the practical usage of it actually wasn't relying on those in a lot of cases.
Look, I know I'm going to get mocked. I know I'm going to get ridiculed. The emails are going to start pouring in about how I use old technology and won't adapt to the times and all that kind of nonsense. But look, if you have something that works, can you not say at a certain point, okay, this is what I want. This particular machine running this particular software, thank you, I'm done. I don't need more updates. I'm not connecting it to the net, so there's no risk of something coming in and infecting my machine. I'm careful with what I connected to, and it's doing what I want it to do. So why do I have to change because somebody decided to improve their code and in the process break something of mine? Go ahead, Gila.
Did you ever have this one connected to the internet? Or has it...
Gosh, I guess so. Yeah, probably at some point.
I was thinking back on the U2 incident, which was 10 years ago now. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Is it the airplane? Is it the band? Is it the Negative Land song? Or
I do.
The band.
Let me guess. Can I take a guess here?
Sure.
The U2 incident, perhaps, is when iTunes essentially dropped U2 songs onto every single person's device that was using it.
Oh, and you can't delete it.
I still have those goddamn songs on my phone, and they drive me crazy when they start playing.
So wait, let me understand. You cannot delete this music from your phone.
And Lord, I have tried. And the way that, again, I'm an iPhone user, shame away. There is, the Apple Music, which they switched over from iTunes, and now they can switch versions of things, and this is how we got down that whole rabbit hole of not knowing how to download music onto my phone. We're not going back there. Uh-huh. But the U2 album, what is it called, Songs of Innocence, just showed up in every single person's Apple Music. And to this day, it is there 10 years later. It gets precedence over songs I actually like, over songs I chose. Oh, it's the most annoying, not the most annoying thing, but it's right up there.
It's up there.
And it's way up there. So I'm just guessing that you have had this build offline for at least the last 10 years if you didn't wind up with the U2 album Songs of Innocence in it.
No, I have nothing like that on that system. I can delete whatever I want. I can copy whatever. Look, everything is MP3, so not this ridiculous Apple format that has all kinds of copyright issues. No, I decide where I want to copy my audio files, period. That's how it should be. That's how it used to be. And we need to stop accepting that it should be any other way. Unless we want it that way. And then, yeah, it's a choice. But it shouldn't be rammed down our throats. On this note, there's another story that didn't annoy me nearly as much as the one about keeping your smartphone safe during the heat. It's that flip phone sales are surging as people seek connection without distraction. This is good. I like this. And it's not because I'm just embracing old technology. It's because I'm embracing choice. And not mass stupidity or hypnosis. So flip phones are having a moment. People are snatching up those basic clamshell throwbacks of the early 2000s. Faster than a bag of discounted Reese's the day after Halloween. What am I reading from? I'm reading from USA Today. Okay, that explains the tone. The reasons are simple. We've burned out on our smartphones, social media, and passively allowing years of our lives to melt away mindlessly stuck on screens. Yeah, okay, fine. Look, smartphones, they're useful for certain things. They're very useful. But having them all the time is detrimental to our health, to our mental ability, to our safety even. You know, if you're driving and using a smartphone, it's a lot more dangerous than if you're using a flip phone and just chatting with somebody or something like that. And my idea, you know, people who are concerned about their kids using smartphones at school or teachers that don't like that, let's just, you know, make it standard in schools that kids can only have flip phones. It'll you know, boost the flip phone industry like you wouldn't believe, and kids will stay safe from the addiction of smartphones, in school at least, and I don't know, your kids will be able to be reached in case of an emergency. So that's something worth considering. Rob?
Yeah, this is funny to think about because I remember, you know, the clamshell flip phone era, or as they now call it, feature phone, which is a fun name considering that the selling point is it has far fewer features than a smartphone. But, you know, thinking of what a smartphone is now, and when I was on a flip phone, what my modern smartphone is something that I, you know, probably would have paid quite a lot of money for if I had that much, and it would have been amazing. And now it's this mundane thing that I don't use, you know, a fraction of the potential of most of the time when it's in my pocket. But the idea that there are now young people rebelling against their parents' generation and not wanting to be connected to social media, to the news, to all the other stuff that's going on online 24/7 at every, you know, moment of their lives, this is, I think, sociologically a very interesting thing to think about. And there's, you know, that school of thought, and then there's the other school of thought among young people who do use smartphones that actually making phone calls on it is something that they rarely ever do, because it's just about going online, communicating, texting, you know, mailing, whatever, and using social media. But if you actually call them and ring their phone, they'll act like you're intruding.
I mean, first of all, my first question was, we are talking about, like, a flip phone, which I think people refer to as a feature phone, as opposed to a dumb phone, which is the other thing. I mean, you know, you don't want to, oh, hey, I bought a dumb phone. No, you're not going to say that. But I did want to make sure we were talking about that kind of, like, old school flippy phone and not the new foldable smartphone, which is a whole other category.
No, I'm not even thinking about that.
But the thing I was thinking about, though, was back in the day when I had, you know, my Motorola Razor flippy whatever, and I bought the Motorola, what was it called, a Juke or something, because it had space for 36 songs on it, and I was very excited. But as a person who gets lost a lot, having a GPS system in my pocket I find incredibly helpful. Because, you know, thinking about when, at the top of the show, we were talking about this, if you wanted to take pictures, you just have to carry around a camera. If you got lost, you needed to carry around an external GPS system. I know that there are a lot of things that the smartphone era has made worse or more annoying or more problematic, but there are some things it has made better, like mm-hmm. always having the opportunity to get to where I'm going in my pocket.
But Gila, those things, even back then, were new. You know, when I was growing up, you know, I didn't have the ability to be told where to go. I didn't have the ability to take a picture whenever I wanted to. I'd have to, you know, make a special trip and bring a camera with me to do that. So we got used to these new features as being normal. And now I think we believe that we have to have smartphones in order to have those features without having to carry other devices. We could just not carry the other devices or have the smartphone and learn skills that we used to always have, such as knowing how to get around, learning how to get around on our own, and saying, hey, that would make a good picture. I'll be sure to bring my camera next time, or something like that. Look, I'm not saying this is how people should live. I'm just saying, you know, you are not as beholden to your smartphone as you might be told that you are. And it's good to just kind of not have it sometimes, or have it in your pocket for, you know, for backups or emergencies or whatever, and just see how you do without it, you know, at least for a while. Alex, go ahead.
Coincidentally, about 2 weeks ago, I bought a flip phone, and it's pretty awesome. It wasn't for myself. It was actually for a colleague of mine in London who, for various reasons, needed a phone number in the United States. So I went to a place on 28th Street, one of these kind of small cellular places that, you know, used to unlock phones and various things. I just went in there and I said, yeah, I'm looking for a cheap flip phone, something like that, that will just, you know, and a SIM card that will get me a U.S. number. I don't need a calling plan. It can be, and I think for about 50 or 60 bucks, I left with a phone and I went back to my office. I fired the thing up, worked perfectly, and it's pretty awesome. I got to tell you, I'm almost jealous of this flip phone that I have on my desk. It's a clamshell flip phone, just like your old Motorola Razr.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about it, I thought this was really fascinating, is it's a newer but retro-designed flip phone. I don't even remember who makes it. It might be Motorola. But it actually still does connect to the Internet. There, you can still connect to Wi-Fi. There's no, you know, 4G, 5G service for it, but you can connect it to Wi-Fi. So it can be connected to the Internet in some respects. It does have some apps and things that you can download if you wanted to use GPS, et cetera. But it would be incredibly annoying to try to use something like Facebook or surf the web or do too much texting from this phone. So in that sense, I feel like it does fulfill almost all of the needs. You have some Internet access when you need it. You can use GPS if you need it. But it's a small phone. It's not going to be there, you know, vying for your attention, constantly buzzing, you know, getting LinkedIn notifications because some idiot that you've never met has reposted something. I thought it's pretty cool. It's pretty neat.
Yeah,
and I love the idea of flip phone research.
The fact that it makes using Facebook a pain in the ass, that is incentive enough for me because I will be discouraged from using it, as I feel many people should be, because it wastes their time. I'm reading here where people spend 9 hours a day on their smartphones. Look, we're not the problem, I don't think, anybody here. I think we all have good discipline as far as how often we use these devices. But a lot of people are pretty tied to their smartphones and to their detriment. It's not healthy. It's not helping the way they think it is. Go ahead, Alex.
You know, another thing that this just reminded me of is a bit of a trip down memory lane, too, in terms of smartphones and how they've changed us in many ways. I recently had occasion to very unfortunately go to a funeral of a dear friend of mine who he passed away far too young and was one of the first people, one of my first friends from junior high school. And on that occasion, I wound up actually taking the train out to Long Island with my wife and my ex-girlfriend from high school, like my first girlfriend from high school. And I had these weird memories kind of flowing back. It was also weird to be, sitting on the Long Island Railroad with your first girlfriend and your last girlfriend, right? You know, your wife, which is kind of a neat thing. But I had these weird memories flooding back to me of high school and the fact that my ex-girlfriend and I, you know, we were in different classes, and when we used to pass each other in the hallways, we would exchange notes, you know, these handwritten notes. I mean, do you remember doing this in high school? And that's how you communicated with people, because there was no other way.
Why wouldn't you just talk to them?
Because you didn't have enough time to have a full-on conversation while you were changing classes.
Well, I also didn't have that much to say to people I'm just passing by. I'm going to see them later, so I appreciate what you're saying, though. It's an old way of doing things.
It was an old-fashioned way of communicating, and I had this memory of this diskette box. It was a 5 1/4 diskette box of all of the notes that my first girlfriend had given to me, and I saved this for a long time. I have no idea where the hell it is now, of course, but that type of thing never happens anymore, because these kids, even if they are using flip phones these days, they're still going to have the ability to text each other. There's always a way to communicate with somebody else. So this whole idea of passing notes in between classes is completely obsolete now. I'm really curious as to whether kids still do pass notes in some way or another, or if that's just totally gone.
Did you ever have the teacher say, do you want to share this note with the whole class? Did that ever happen to you?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Absolutely.
It never happened to me. In fact, I'm not sure I ever passed a note, to be honest. And it's kind of weird how you took all your notes and stored them in a diskette box, which is kind of like, you know, the future. So it's like you're struggling between two worlds there. But it's interesting. Go ahead, Kyle.
You should scan those and actually put them onto, like, a thumb drive just for your own reference, like, digitize it and keep it in another form. I'm just really present to I like the idea that people are resisting what what influence the sort of dominant designs have had. And it doesn't surprise me one bit that some of these old school manufacturers that made a lot of the phones we're talking about back when, you know, before a lot of the smartness was around and on the scene, they're getting in on re-releasing versions that have a good mix of features. And it actually speaks to what the, like, iPhone and that form factor coming out in 2008, what that did. It kind of reflects that was the confluence of all the other design features in mobile handsets before that, and then they reduced it and condensed it and minimalized a whole lot of stuff to fit sort of a new paradigm for features and stuff. And we're all sort of the trick was we kept coming back to them as though that's where the innovation came from, but everything they put into that first iPhone came from other stuff that was going on in the market and other behaviors that people were engaging in with what devices were available. And so I like the idea that people are just digging deep, getting weird with whatever handsets they use. And don't forget about accessories like Bluetooth. Always use like hands-free. Turn that stuff on, especially if you're using these computers in vehicles and stuff, and try to get away from having it out all the time and getting dusty and having the speakers not work like Alex's phone. But basically, I'm really interested in this idea of us individuals deciding what to do with the phones and making our own sorts of handsets. As all of this stuff gets smaller and smaller, we can kind of make up what's on trend in places like the classroom and in the wider world, and instead of just looking to these main manufacturers for the latest and greatest. That's not where it comes from anyway. It's from the people. It's from what people like and are comfortable with.
We've had quite a conversation here. This could go on for a long time. I just want to turn it over to listeners for a moment. We have some email to our email address, oth@2600.com. This is concerning our conversation about advertising on YouTube we had a couple weeks ago, or that we're having on an ongoing basis. And this unsigned listener says the main difference with Off the Hook and YouTube is that you pay YouTube to get rid of the ads, and Off the Hook keeps nagging you about pledging every episode, no matter what. And, of course, they say they're kidding. But it raises a good point, because a lot of people do complain about that and say that we're constantly asking for support. But let me explain the difference. We are not airing advertisements, and the reason we're not airing advertisements is because our listeners are our sponsors. They're the only sponsors we will ever have. We're a non-commercial radio station. We can have conversations like this. And on a commercial radio station, well, what if Apple is one of the advertisers? Could we have talked about anything we just talked about over the last 45 minutes or so? I don't think so. It's freedom of speech. Sometimes you'll hear things you agree with. Sometimes you'll hear things that you don't agree with or that annoy you. But the important thing is that it's a forum for speech to be heard, for you, listeners, to be heard, as you have just been heard now. And with that, I would like to remind people that the only way this place continues to exist as it has since 1960 is for you to give a call to 212-209-2950, pledge whatever you can afford. You can pledge on a monthly basis, you can make a one-time pledge, you can do all sorts of things. But the important thing is that you're pledging for 99.5 FM to remain on the air and broadcasting non-commercial content. You can also go to the webpage, give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. For pledges of $150 or more, there's a thank you gift that is basically all of the shows of Off the Hook from 1988 to the end of 2023 on one flash drive or thumb drive or whatever you call it. That's for pledges of 150 or more. The operators will be able to tell you about that, or you'll see it on the website. But the important thing is to pledge to the radio station to keep us going, to keep us on the air. Again, 64 years? Has it been that long? Wow. And I challenge anybody to find another radio station in New York City that has been going for that long without changing their format, without doing so. Yeah, there have been attempts. There's constantly attempts to get us off the air, to take over the license, to sell the place. There's always people that want to do bad things. That's never going to change. But as long as there are people out there who want to do good things, and those are our listeners, we'll survive whatever storms come. So again, 212-209-2950, website givetowbai.org, and please spread the word, because obviously we can't reach the people who aren't listening, and there's a lot of people not listening, as well as people who are listening, and people all over the world support this place. We talk about it in foreign countries. People are aware of WBAI. It's historic and ground setting. All right, we're going to continue our conversation over on YouTube. Just go to channel 2600 at 8 o'clock, and you will find us there. And you can call in, in fact, and ask your questions, or hear more banter from us. In the meantime, we're going to sign off here from WBAI. Please keep listening to 99.5 FM. And please also observe Juneteenth, which is what today is. Today is a holiday, and it's a really, really important day. And we're privileged and honored to even be broadcasting on this day. It's so important to talk about history, to study it, and to learn from it. And keep listening to WBAI, and I think you'll do exactly that. We'll see you next week, or we'll see you at 8 o'clock on Overtime on YouTube. Good night, everyone.
Bye.
But he wants.